This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support Outreach Issue held on the 13th of June, 2017. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Sarah Bakke. Please begin.
Hi, this is Sarah Bakke. Thank you all for joining us. See if staff can bring up the PowerPoint. We will be doing a topic review today, as well as touching on some of the feedback that we got from the cross-community questions that we submitted, the responses we got back from that. And so before we begin, please let us know if anyone has an update to their SOI. Not seeing any hands, no chat. Additionally, if there is anything that anyone would like to discuss for any other business at the end of the meeting that you'd like us to add for a specific topic that we touch on, you could please let us know now. And, of course, if something comes up during the call that you'd like added, we can do that as well. You can just put it in the chat or raise your hand and let us know. Okay, not seeing any hands. And staff, is everyone able to scroll themselves, or is it just me who has the scrolling capability?
Hi, Sarah. It's Terry. Everyone can scroll themselves.
Yeah, I just saw the comment. All right. Thanks. Great. Thank you. So the topic review that we're going to do today is going to be on systems, communications, and application fees. This is just to see sort of where we are so far in our discussions, and then we'll also be taking a look at the feedback that we got from the CC2 on application fees to see if it's given us some direction and answers maybe that we were looking for. So with that, let's start off with the topic review for systems. The question that was put forward to this group was, how can the systems used to support the new GTLD program, such as TAS, Centralized Zone Data Service, portal, etc., be made more robust, user-friendly, and better integrated? To date, what we have discussed and some of the items that we think would be of assistance would be having one system with a centralized login, increased usability with ability to use non-ASCII characters, the ability to copy and paste, as well as add attachments, increased security to ensure confidential information is secured, and just a better overall user experience. So this is sort of the feedback we have so far. Based off of this, does anyone have any other thoughts or feedback, or do you think there's something on here that shouldn't be? Should we expand on these ideas that we have so far? Michael, I see you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm not sure how much in detail we did talk about this in the past, but I do know that ICANN has been looking at the beta versions of their own current portal, and a lot of the things that have come out of there, I think, can feedback can be here as well. But one of the main issues that I've been lobbying for a while is multiple users or multiple logins that we're able to give or assign to different people for the purpose that they need to use the portals for. And once that's all integrated into one, if that is what we're looking at, then that would be a very, very happy system.
Well, that's great feedback, Michael. Yeah, probably multiple logins as well as maybe even tiered. You know, you have your admin person and they can assign different levels of access to their users depending on what their role is. It'd probably be a good idea. Okay, great. Thank you. Does anyone else have any feedback on this topic before we move forward? Okay, seeing no hands and no chat, I will go on to the next slide. So, next up is communications. So, we were asked to examine access to and content within the knowledge base, as well as communication methods between ICANN and the community. So far, our feedback today has been increasing search capabilities, subscription opt-in for communications, and adequate time and outreach to developing countries. Based off of this summary, do we have any additional thoughts? Do you want to expand this? Take something off? See, there's a question from Michael in the chat regarding the last topic, saying what are all the portals or systems that could be centralized. That I do not know. Perhaps staff knows or could give feedback. In the interim, I see that, okay, I think Steve is going to answer that question, and then we'll have Donna up next after Steve answers. Go ahead, Steve.
Sure, thanks. This is Steve Chan. I was actually going to let Donna go, but I'll go ahead quickly. I don't know that I necessarily wanted to answer that specifically. Like, I could note some of the things that the GDD team had used for the program. But I was actually going to say in regards to that is that it might be a future state, as in what they use in the past is not necessarily what they're going to use in the future. It's likely going to be an implementation element for them to consider. What was I going to say? That question is probably likely a implementation element. I'm not sure how deep into the policy recommendations that might delve into. So just wanted to add that. Thanks.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. And that makes sense that it would be implementation. I did not know the answer, so I'm glad someone was able to fill in the blanks a little bit. Donna, please go ahead, and thank you for your patience.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. My Adobe just reloaded. Just give me a sec. So just on the slide that we're talking about, I'm a little bit confused as to whether – sorry, I just got it back, so just give me a second. I'm not sure what communication we're talking about here, because A and B, increased search capabilities and subscription opt-in for communications, could actually be out for applicants or contractor parties, and the system that ICANN is using to get information out to those people. Sorry, Adobe is just playing up, so I might be a little bit incoherent here. But the C seemed to me to suggest that we're talking about communications more broadly that is not specifically related to events that are going on once an applicant has applied or, you know, going through the process, but it seems to me more broadly about communication about the program. So I'm just a little bit confused about what this I'm sorry, my connection is dropping in and out. So I'm a little bit confused about what this topic is actually about. Is it communication between ICANN and applicants or, you know, those that go on to be registry operators? Or is this communication more broadly about the program and getting that information out about the program to potential applicants? So I'm a little bit confused about what this is. What this topic is getting at, Sarah. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, Donna. Sorry, I was having a hard time getting my mute button. So I think your question is specific to B then regarding the subscription opt-in for communications. I see Krista has her hand raised. I'll go ahead and let her speak.
Hi, Sarah. So sorry to answer the question. The intent was it from the notes was between ICANN and the applicant. So that's going through the application process that they knew what was going on, and they didn't always have to continuously go to the ICANN website to search for information, know what was going on, so they could opt in and get their newsletter or understand what the changes were that happened without searching. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Krista, for clarifying. And Donna, I see your hand is still up. I'm not sure if that's old or if you had a follow-up.
So it's an old one, but I do have a follow-up for Krista. So what I don't understand, if that's the case, is C, adequate and timely outreach to developing countries. I don't understand the distinction here between applicants and, you know, whether they're from developing countries or not. I'm not seeing the connection here, so if that could be explained, that would be helpful.
I'm muting myself too many times. It's Krista for the record. I think there's two different topics there. One is for the outgoing communications for, say, applicant support, and the other one was the opt-in to communications as well. So I think there was we were discussing at some point that there was confusion on people understanding what was going on, and even in applicant support, people obviously didn't have the information readily at hand either and didn't really have an easy way to retrieve it. Just going off my memory, I can research what we said before a little bit further for next time, but that's just off the top of my head.
Great. Thank you, Krista, and thank you, Donna. And I see a comment from Jeff in the chat saying that adequate outreach can also mean language support as well. And those who want to file objections or public comments may need to be communicated with as well. And that could be an option. And I see Donna is typing. I'll give her a moment. Does anyone else have any comments or concerns they'd like to raise their hand for? And Donna is saying, I think we need more clarity around what this is supposed to address. And Jeff says, in other words, the knowledge base is not only for applicants, but for the whole community of participants. Okay. I think that's helpful, and we probably need to go back and flesh this out a little bit further and narrow it down some. Not seeing any other hands, so I'm going to move on If anyone else has something you want to add to this, please just let me know. So next up we have application fees. And we were asked to evaluate accuracy of cost estimates and or review the methodology to develop the cost model while still adhering to the principle of cost recovery. Examine how payment processing can be improved. So the summary we have to date based off of our discussions has been systems should be capable of sending automated invoices to organizations who require an invoice to pay an application and related fees. Second, based on cost recovery, but with a minimum floor amount on fees. Use of excess, sorry, my PowerPoint is blurring out on me here. Use of excess funds not yet determined and the potential to return excess funds. We also discussed holistic costing and need to hash that out perhaps further and get ideas and details and also discuss system development costs. So that is where we are as a general overview for this topic. Based on this information, does anyone have anything further they would like to add to it? Something in here that we think should not be, we don't want to discuss further? See, Jeff is typing. Jeff has noted that we should update this with the tie from the discussions earlier in the full group on the model, FCFS versus rounds, so first come, first serve versus rounds. Donna, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. So I agree with Jeff. If there's some way that we can incorporate the discussion from earlier today into this, it would be helpful. But just a suggestion here, so evaluate accuracy of cost estimates and examine how payment processing can be improved. Sorry, Siri's talking to me here. If we can just have evaluate accuracy of cost estimates as one point and then the summary to date underneath as it fits into that, and then as a second point, examine how payment processing can be improved, which I think is A, but it looks like we're mixing the two here. So I think for clarity, it would be helpful if we just took those two first sentences apart and put the relevant subpoints underneath each one.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And we can do that. Oops. Sorry, my screen's going a little crazy here, and I'm losing where I am. All right. And I see a comment from Jeff. He says that Donna agree it's amount of fees versus process to make payment. And Donna agrees. Point A relates to the latter. All right. All right, I'm not seeing any further discussions on this. So let's go to the next slide, which gets us into some of the feedback that we got from the CC2 questions that we submitted. This, again, relates to the application fees, and it looks like we've got some pretty good feedback from the community. So the question that was asked is, the application fee of $185,000 for the 2012 round, the new GTLD program, was established on the principle of breaking even, whereby the program's total revenues are equal to all related expenses. In addition, the fee should ensure the program is fully funded and not subsidized by any other sources of revenue. Should another mechanism be considered? For example, cost plus reasonable return, or fixed plus variable volume discounts, or other. So some of the feedback that we have received has been, and this is sort of cut and paste from what we, the information that we were provided, was a need for legal contingency set aside, we believe, So need for a legal contingency set aside, we believe, has been and should be greatly reduced. Another statement was that ICANN still needs to be held responsible to a budget performance target, $185,000, which clearly an overestimate of the cost resulting in significant surplus. Next would be each applicant must post a deposit of $1 million in order to qualify to bid to operate new GTLD, bidding for each new GTLD per the recommendations of the U.S. Department of Justice and the Trust Division. For example, cost plus reasonable return, fixed plus variable, volume discounts, or other. So I'm going to stop here and see if we have any feedback, reaction to these first three comments that were provided to us on this question. Michael, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sarah. That last bulletin of needing to post $1 million in order to qualify to bid to operate in the GTLD, was that more detailed per se? For example, is this only in reference to those who would go to auction, or is this in reference to those who just apply, period? So if I was just to apply, I'd need to have $1 million deposit just in case I went to bid? Is that, how this is being written?
Can I interject?
Sure. Yes. Great. Thank you.
Crystal, for the record. So I think maybe taking a step back might be a little bit helpful. What this shows is some of the highlights that were brought from the question or the responses to the question. And what I was trying to do here was to kind of give some highlights on the different angles that we haven't considered yet in our discussion to date. So some of them are annotated, but the essence is there on each one of these. So this comment here is quite original, and we haven't discussed it to date. It hasn't been adjusted, and there is no other background or any other information around it. It's actually, I think, verbatim on this one. Where some of the others, I just reduced some of the wording to make it kind of clear and to stay on point to see if we wanted to adjust our thinking to date and or change our thought process or consider other things, so to speak. So that's kind of what it done in each one of these, because we never thought of, say, posting a deposit of $1 million. And some of the other feedback around that. Hopefully that makes more sense.
Okay, great. Thank you, Krista. And I see we have some comments in the chat. Jeff has said the $185,000 was based on three elements and assuming only 500 applications. One, cost of evaluation processing of application, two, historical costs, and three, legal contingency. Do we have agreement fees are the same types of fees that we should be paying going forward. In other words, is that the formula we should be applying moving forward? Should we still reimburse historical costs, and what does that mean? Deposit of $1 million was only in the case of an auction. And Michael has commented, as long as that is clear, and Jeff followed up with, I am not sure where this comment came from. So going to the beginning of the first part of Jeff's question, how does everyone feel about this formula? Is this something that we really are interested in sticking with? Does anyone have any feedback on the idea that it should be cost of evaluation, processing of the application, historical costs, and legal contingency fees? Do we want to have similar type of fees? Is there something that should be removed or put in its place? I see more people are typing. Donna said at Christmas, so this is just a sample of the comments submitted. And Christy has said, yes, it does not cover all of them, but items that we may have not considered or discussed to date. The link has all of the responses. And Cheryl has noted that surely the historical costs were costs recovered with the oversubscription compared to the assumed 500 of applicant last round. Donna, I see you raised your hand. Would you like to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. So we had some good discussion around this today on the full call that I think it would be helpful to incorporate into this. But I wonder, you know, as a principle, I think the any future GTLD process should be cost neutral on ICANN's budget, which means that, you know, the process in no way should come from ICANN's current budget. So it has to be cost neutral, I think. And maybe that's potentially a better way of thinking about it than cost recovery, because one of the things that we discussed today was we have no idea how many applicants we're going to get in the next round. Absolutely no idea. And I think even if we got economists to do some review, it would still be really difficult to determine that because for a number of reasons. I mean, one of those being we don't even know when the next round is going to kick off. There's a number of, you know, different suggestions out there in the community. So we don't know when it's going to kick off. We don't know how many applicants we're going to have. We don't know what the capacity issue is. You know, we understand the board's going to consider CEDAR. So I wonder if we look at this as a principle of cost neutral, if we can all agree to that. But I think cost recovery is not, we're going to run into the same problem we did last time. We're unable to predict how many applicants we're going to get, so trying to pick that number out of the sky is too difficult. So we need to find some other way to come up with a number, I think. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Donna. That's an excellent point. Jeff, I see you have your hand raised, and then Alan afterward. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully, can you guys hear me? Okay, I'm assuming you can. I like the term cost neutral, and I think we should further define that as being cost neutral between the time in which the program starts its communication period or whatever we consider the launch to be up until the time in which applicants sign agreements, because I think at that point, then the costs are, the costs for ICANN, in theory, are covered by the fees that every registry pays. So I just want to make sure we kind of bind the time period between which we measure the costs being neutral. Because I know there were games, there were some games played, well, I won't say games because that implies something negative, but there was certainly a lot of leeway in determining, cost recovery or historical costs, some of which related to things that may have been for research or activities after a registry was actually, operating, or certainly after a registry signed a contract. So I just want to make sure we bind it, because then from that point forward, in theory, the cost neutral aspect of the program should be based on registries that have signed agreements, moving forward. Hope that makes sense. I don't know if that was more confusing or not, but, hopefully it made sense.
You there? We can't hear you.
It's Alan. Do you want me to go ahead?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay. A couple of comments. It's quite clear that the comments we have received are all over the map, and there's no way we can incorporate them all in, because some of them are diametrically opposed to each other. Interesting how we're going to proceed on that once we start looking at the detailed comments. In terms of what does cost recovery or cost neutral mean, I'm not 100% sure I agree with Jeff. If you look at the revenue that we bring in from these registries, especially when you factor in the comments that for small registries the fixed fees are much too large and should be lowered, it's not clear that their fees will cover the costs to ICANN on an ongoing basis, in terms of compliance costs and other things like that. So I think we do have to think about that. And moreover, there is a cost of ramping up support to be able to address the potentially thousands of new registries, even more than we have now. And I think it's reasonable that the program supports that not be an operational cost on ICANN, borne out of fees alone. So I think you have to take a pretty complete look at what does it cost ICANN to put this program in place, not just to process the applications. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Jeff, is that old hand or?
Nope, new hand. Just to address what Alan said, and the reason. I just heard some beeps. Am I still on?
You're still on.
Oh, okay. So that beeping is not coming from me, or am I the only one hearing it?
No, everyone. Well, I'm hearing it too. But let's ignore it.
Okay, so I'll ignore it. All right. The reason I said it should be time-bound and doesn't include things like what you mentioned, Alan, though I don't disagree with you on the substance of what you said with respect to smaller registries, is that I don't believe it's within our scope to determine what registries pay ICANN on a going-forward basis once they've signed the agreement. Yes, that's incorporated into the contract, whatever they pay. But because there are so many registries at this point, I guess I kind of compartmentalize that into, well, if there's going to be a new fee structure, that's going to be something that goes through the normal contract amendment process between the registries, ICANN, and, of course, feedback from the community. But I don't see us as determining what that provision in the contract should be in terms of how much smaller registries versus larger registries should pay. Other than the aspect of applicant support, when we talk about the holistic view of the applicant support program, we should consider how fees are paid on an ongoing basis for future TLDs that qualify for applicant support. But other than that, I've compartmentalized that into a different compartment. That's kind of beyond the scope of what our PDP is doing. But if that's a personal opinion, not as a chair, I don't think we've really considered that that issue. So I just want to, it's a personal view. Thanks.
It's just for the record, Alan, is that an old or? Alan, I'll wait for you for a second to see if you lower your hand or if you want to speak, just please interrupt me. Sarah has also brought up a good point that there's likely an established mechanism with ICAP for dealing with excess funds, but I'm not sure if there are mechanisms for dealing with these scenarios or projects that are underfunded. Like Alan, I would rather see a transparent, active, and robust compliance department and ensure there is funding in place for that. So I think I'm going to go ahead on the slides because there's a lot more information that's going to support what everyone's talking about here and also give some other perspectives to it, which I think will be very helpful to the conversation rather than getting caught up on terminology and kind of taking a step back and looking at more of the big picture and the policy work around it. So you'll see in slide the second 1.4.1, which is number 7, which is a continuation of where we just were on the same topic. So some of the highlights that were responded to include making sure that allocation of the 2012 surplus decide how that would be allocated going forward. I'm not sure if that's in our purview. I don't believe it is, but this is one of the responses. Additionally, the COI is not needed. Instead, a fraction of the application fees can be used in the program. Next, Brown TLD had way too much overhead. So there should be, one of the comments was, it should, the fee going forward should be substantially reduced. The original $185,000 fee was too high, and it was a barrier to entry to smaller applicants. So along the same lines that we were just discussing. Next, forecasts need not be conservative second time around. Given the buffer from round one, application fees should be in the region of $50,000 to $80,000. And we're going to see further discussions on that in the next slides, also on people's expectations of fees. But I think more regardless of the policy work should be what is it and do we have floors and ceilings, but we'll get there. And then lastly on the slide, we have the anticipated litigation expenses were already included in the last application fees, and really we didn't really use any of them or very minor. I don't know the actual numbers, which would also bring down the application fees going forward. Going to slide 8. I'm going to skip this for right now just because we kind of already started to discuss it without getting into some of the other points, but it'll continue on in 1.4.2 a little bit more. So 1.4.2 asks, do you believe that the principle of breaking even was implemented effectively? And do you believe the $185,000 was a reasonable fee? And is it still a reasonable fee? And, again, do you think that a break-even model can be more accurately implemented for future applications? And do you have any suggestions on how to minimize any shortfalls or surpluses? And, again, we were just discussing this. So some of the feedback that we received was any excess fee should be clearly articulated in advance in the terms and conditions. Should other factors, including that should be considered in the fee, is concepts of fairness and competition. so far, I don't think we really discussed anything around fairness. We've done lots around competition. And then jumping on to slide number 10, there was one comment that really went into the application fees, where they're guessing that the application fee should be well under $100,000. They gave the numbers as to why and the associated fees. So they're guessing that the realistic fee should be under $100,000. So I'm sure we can open up for that. It's going to lead us back to a flooring conversation. Next, there was a comment on there should be a substantial minimum fee to take an applicant seriously and to understand the perpetual commitment to the TLD. And then along the same lines, which I thought was quite interesting, was we haven't really discussed on what a substantial fee, lower fee would be. And one comment was perhaps by 50% would be sufficient, still to be considered substantial. So part of, I guess, more things to discuss. So I'm going to open up to see what other people have, if the conversation will change based on that feedback, or if I should continue going on a little bit further into the replies to the application. So, Jeff, I see I haven't read all the comments yet, but I'm curious to see if anyone addressed the concept of underfunding. My guess is most people assumed overfunding. To answer your question, Jeff, there is one or two comments on that, and there are one or two comments also on determining the price ahead of time. So maybe I'll continue to read just for couple seconds here. I don't really want to bore everyone, but I think everyone kind of needs to see the different things. And there's a lot of overlap on all of it, and there's a lot of cut and paste of the same thing amongst the questions. So going to 1.4.3, again, should the concept of break-even be strictly adhered to, or there should be other aspects to be considered? So some of the feedback here is not at the expense of small applicants. Not at the expense of small applicants. That would be deferred by a higher fee. And we need to be sensitive to spending public funds. The financial model currently in place is definitely a barrier to entry. And the fee in the region of $50,000 to $80,000 is still a significant investment. And additionally, which I don't think we discussed before, was provide ICANN funding to successfully manage and promote the program. Future. Again, we have the concept of fairness, competition, security, and stability. We've discussed, obviously, security and stability before. And on this one particular comment, based on cost recovery, they're simply saying it has to be on cost recovery. Just going to jump to slide 14, which is 1.4.4, and it's how should the excess funds resulting from the floor costs less the actual cost be justified? And some of the feedback was the applicants require certainty for the purpose of business planning and should not be held accountable if somehow ICANN has budgeted poorly. I think that's relating to underfunding. They should use actual data to make sure that their financial model fits. Excesses must be returned to the community in some fashion. Create an environment for application that reduces the barrier to entry as much as possible and achieves transparency and trust in the program's costing model. Very hard to set the fee with excess funds. Excess funds should be used to support general outreach. Excess amounts should be clearly articulated in the positions 24. And another one, which was more original here, was to credit ongoing ICANN fees for applicable registries in phases or return to the applicants in phases, and that ICANN should not wait until the end of the entire program to use the excess funds. Anyone have any thoughts, questions, ideas, feedback? So, Michael, I see you said there's a tendency that one, that either the program was overfunded so that fees should be lower, which is true. Two, in the event the expenses did not occur, then those should be refunded. The problem here is the consideration of refunding fees in the current round have come too late in the game, I think, which I agree. But I think we're more addressing what will we do for policy in the future if we created or we have these excess funds. And next, you say, I think what would satisfy many people is that the floor was set a similar price model to what we have now with a promise return of funds not occurred once the contract is signed. Okay. How do most registries feel about excess funds being used for community outreach rather than being returned in some way to the registry? I could channel the funds into increasing trust of the industry. So I guess the question is, how do we create a policy around the excess funds? Anyone want to talk rather than type? Donna, nice idea, but how would you do that and what would the metrics be? I think we could probably, you know, if that's a starting point that we want to consider, we can probably hash through certain parts of it. Well, I see you have your hand raised, so feel free.
Thanks, Krista. Donna Austin. I think this is just a general comment that because of the diversity of views that has been expressed in the CCT to comment, and given that what you've picked out here is what you believe is perhaps new information that we haven't discussed previously in this group, I think it's going to take a little bit of time to digest all the information and, you know, come up with some kind of roadmap forward. I think it's, you know, this is, the fee issue was always going to be contentious, I think, and what to do with excess fees. You know, to Michael's point about whether that should be returned to the applicants or the community, I mean, that's a very touchy subject. So I suspect that within this working group we're going to have a number of diverse views on that too. So I guess just a general comment that this is a lot of information and it's difficult to digest at this point in time. So maybe we just need a bit of time to do that. Thanks, Krista.
Thanks, Donna. Yeah, and I totally agree. And I think it's a good starting point, or at least hopefully gets us all thinking a little bit on it. So, if nothing else, I think we can certainly have lots to discuss for next time. A couple more comments. Happy to allow excess funds to be used in some other way other than being returned to them. I think that would be a little bit controversial within, you know, if it's maybe 1,000 or 2, it's one thing, but I think in the calculations there was, I think somebody calculated 67,000. So if it is that high, I don't think, I think we need to be a little bit more. Separate PDP for determining excess funds, or is it necessary to have something in writing before we finish the PDP? So the comments were people would like to see it in the terms and conditions that there was something set ahead of time so they knew what the funds were going to be used for rather than repeating what we've done in the first round. At least that's how I interpreted the document after reading all of the comments. And Sarah says, John, I must admit, I hadn't thought of it at that level of detail. I'll agree there are a lot of divergent opinions on this. We agree. It's not going to be an easy topic to kind of, I guess, address, but I guess that's why we're here. So, yeah. Anyone else have any comments? I think maybe based on everyone's feedback, and I know it's a lot to review and to digest, maybe what I'll do is I'll send out the slide deck from this to everyone to digest, and maybe it would be better that we review it next meeting, and along with the, of course, the link to the entire deck. That'd be helpful. Yeah. Thanks, Cheryl. Donna, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. Maybe I just should have put this in chat. It's a bit of an observation. The CCWG on auction proceeds is going to try to work out what to do with a significant amount of money left over from contention sets or, you know, ICANN auctions of last resort. It's going to take them a long time to get through that. To the extent that it's relevant to the work we're doing here, I guess it, when I think about it, doesn't really matter because it's going to be some time off in the future, but I just wondered whether there were any parallels there. You know, there were a lot of suggestions in the early discussions around the CCWG on auction proceeds about possible projects that excess funds could have been used for. Maybe... I don't know. If we start getting down to that level of discussion rather than just talking about, you know, what the policy should be, maybe that kind of discussion might be helpful. I guess what I'm thinking about is that, you know, universal acceptance has been a big issue for registries and registrars, and there has been some concern that ICANN could have put more money towards that, and perhaps excess fees could have been used to assist with that and move that along quicker. ICANN has said that that's not part of their responsibility, so has, you know, while it's given some funding to the Universal Awareness Working Group, it hasn't, ICANN has stepped away from funding it completely. So maybe, you know, those types of things might help us think about what excess fees could be used for if we come up with a policy that excess fees have to be used for something. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. And yeah, I did listen to the first part or a big chunk of it, and I agree, and we all try to incorporate that going forward as things for us to consider if we're going to wanting to use those funds for some other program, etc. And I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I think Donna's point on things like universal acceptance is quite relevant. I really think we need to look at the costs of the overall program, not just the cost of putting the TLDs into place. And just as I said, compliance fits into that model, so do things like universal acceptance. I think we also are going to have to address the problem that Jeff raised before of what if things are underfunded.
Now, yes, we made some decisions last time which ended up being quite conservative and resulted in a surplus. Along the way, the program took a lot more to develop, and at that point, ICANN dipped into the reserve to fund that that excess development costs. I'm presuming that was repaid, although really I don't think I've ever seen that stated somewhere, and that would be something useful. But let's look at a scenario where there is an underfunding of the program for whatever reason, and there's no other way where the place the money comes from than from ICANN's operational income, you know, either through the reserve for a while or by raising the fees to cover the costs. We don't have anyone else to pay for this. And therefore, I think once we address that and say, where would we get the money from? It has to come from fee, from operational revenues. Then I think the answer to what do you do with the surplus can be answered in the same way. And it's not clear you have to return the money to the people who applied for it, because this is a gambling game we're doing. We're taking risks, and whatever the risks we take, the upside and downside should be done using the same set of rules, I believe. Thank you.
Thanks. I agree, and we'll make sure that we both do the over and the underfunded. What you'll see in the comments is, you know, people say there is funding already in place, or the overfunding from previous rounds is still there and it could be used if there is an underfunding, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll let you read the document, and hopefully we can be in a better place to discuss it next time. Of course, we could just have the ICANN big sale, because that sounds really good right now. Anyways, it is a little bit past the hour, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining. Sorry that it was so much topic and thought it was kind of tying together and overlapping a little bit too much. So I'll send over the slide deck to everyone afterwards, and hopefully the next conversation will be a little bit better. So thank you all for your time, and have a great night. And just a quick reminder that next meeting is July 10th. Thank you.
Thanks, Krista. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a lovely rest of your day.